You're listening to Around Comics, episode 264, brought to you by InStockTrades.com. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is normally recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, but for the second week in a row for our New Year's edition, we are coming to you from Challengers Comics and Conversation. It is located at 1845 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago, and you should certainly drop by if you are in the area. If you are a Chicagoan and you're not checking out Challengers Comics, you should do so, because it's a great store.
You're being a fool. You're depriving yourself.
Oh, I thought you were calling me a fool.
No. Well, yeah. I mean, it works.
Well, that goes without saying.
That was like a Dr. Baltar moment there. I was talking both to the audience and you.
So come by Challengers Comics and Conversation. It is truly, truly a great store. So I'm Christopher Niesman. Let me get you introduced to this week's panel. It's the same panel as last week. So it is not revolved.
Yeah.
We're stuck in 2010. We are stuck.
We rotated the table, though.
We're all sitting on the other side of the table.
We spun the table around. So it is revolving.
Yeah. Mr. Tom Cater, soon to be Mr. Wooster Mass.
Wooster.
I love them comic books. My wife is hooked into Battlestar Galactica now. She's hooked on it. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, she really got into it. And we just finished watching the first season.
Okay. Oh, well, if she's hooked after the first season, she should be happy, because the second and third seasons are pretty awesome.
Yeah, I just won't show her the end.
I like the end.
I love the end. I'm one of the few that did, apparently. So.
I never figured out.
It wasn't like the end was like a huge failure. Like I thought it was going to be, it was all awesome. And then the last
10
episode,
minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't like that. I kind of thought the final season I didn't enjoy as much as the other ones.
Yeah, you know, it's why I said
we'll watch the whole thing.
Yeah, I enjoyed the fourth season. It was fine. And the last episode I was fine with. Some people thought it was maybe a two, you know, whatever.
So. I thought that was – it didn't bother me. And they're like, oh, God, this completely ruined the whole thing.
No.
Which,
speaking of, big up – and I'll introduce our guest, Mr. Mike Norton.
Hello.
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 I don't think that you are a fan. I know Wood from 11 O'Clock certainly isn't a fan. But Doctor Who, big changes for Doctor Who. The end of the David Tennant run on Doctor Who. Just we're recording this on New Year's Day, so Happy New Year! But this is the U.S. premiere is the day after we record this.
So is that the first one with the new guy?
No, that is the last David Tennant episode.
So confusing.
Well, it's the last David Tennant episode. Okay. So you know, a great.
Are they going to get a doctor that I don't want to punch in the face?
Wow,
that's always been I like Doctor Who, but my biggest problem, I've said this before, it's like I felt like if I was his companion, I'd just be like,
I totally agree with you on that.
I would just jack him in the face.
I totally agree with you. It's so funny. I mean, I've talked about this with Crank a lot, because Crank's a huge Doctor Who fan too.
Oh,
and all the baggage I carry about Doctor Who all comes from when I was a kid and it was on PBS.
And it's like a dinosaur. Toy dinosaur.
Yeah, it really was like that. You could see somebody's hand. And then most of the sets were, the TARDIS was basically just a big white room.
Destroy.
And they're just standing in it and they were talking for 30 minutes. And it's like, I like Star Wars. This sucks.
Stepping all over my childhood, Mike.
They fund the new Doctor Who. They sold that white room for the Progressive commercials. Yeah, they use the TARDIS now, the inside of the TARDIS.
That is awesome.
Oh, God, you're right.
It's the same white room.
We've talked about it so much on the show in the last 5 years, but I grew up, I absolutely love Doctor Who. Yeah. That's what got me into comics.
Well, Patrick, the owner of the store, is a huge Doctor Who fan, huge too.
I like Doctor Who.
Well, you know, I started watching the new one because I heard Crank talk about it forever, and I finally watched it. And I liked it, too, but I totally get what you're saying, because every Doctor, I feel like somebody needs to sedate them. He's or like, be chill like, listen, the fuck dude. Out, dude.
Or like, oh, man. This is a pretty big situation. Stop being so smug, or like, you know, and like, just slap him.
You know, he's always the smartest guy in the room. It's kind of a, you know, little bit of a Brainiac 5 going on there with the doctor.
True, yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, definitely. You know, I was thinking about it because I think about these things.
I was thinking about why I
like Doctor Who and why I've always liked Doctor Who. Yeah. You know, even back to the cheesy 1970s.
Tom Baker.
I love Tom Baker. The stories are always so much fun, but the overriding theme of Doctor Who is not about time travel or action adventure. It just has this unbelievable belief in the strength of humanity, and I love that about the show, that it's always about the human spirit
and Daleks.
So
destroy.
You know, I love how hopeful that show is, and it reminds me of the comics that I read whenever I was growing up, and everything.
Yeah, you're one of the few people I know that read the comics. I mean, I remember those.
You like Dave Gibbons?
Well, no, that the thing is, at the time, I didn't know who was drawing it. I just remember there's a comic book of that horrible show that I saw with the White Room. And for me, at the time, I remember that that's not the same guy. I was like, what's the deal with that? That's pretty confusing because they're different doctors and stuff.
Peter Davidson.
And so that really bugged me.
What was great about the comics is that, and that's the great thing about comic books, is that the special effects can look awesome in a comic. It didn't have to be a white room, or they could go to different worlds and they were completely fleshed out, and it was, you know, whatever the imagination could put on paper.
Current Doctor Who comics?
I'm such a dork. I read Doctor Who classics.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. There's
the comics that you probably already
have. There's one right behind you, Mike. It's IDW has actually done a really nice job of reprinting the classic Doctor Who comics that now that's a Peter Davidson era one, so I don't know who did the art on it. It probably surprises,
by Steve Parkhouse.
Okay, Dave Gibbons drew a ton of them. I mean, Alan Moore wrote Doctor Who comics. I mean, the people that it's all that white 2000 AD group of people that worked on Doctor Who comics.
Now, these guys, Steve Parkhouse and Alan McKenzie, wrote a book about how to the business of comics or something like that, how to write and draw and sell your comics. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the best books I had when I was younger.
Really?
It was awesome. And I had no idea at the time. Well, at the time, I had no idea they were British, and I didn't know any of the comics examples that they had in there, but it was an awesome book.
Well, it's really kind of funny because you talk to British creators that even the ones that live here in the States now, and that series has influenced them so much. Like, we had Richard Starkings came in for Windy City last year, and I really had a chance to, you know, really sit down and talk to Richard for the first time, and that series is so influential with him, and just anyone that loves sci-fi from, you know, really the late 60s onward, that lived in Great Britain, that show was
the British Batman.
It kind of, yeah.
No, it is. I mean, I don't know if it's because they had so little. Because I'm being
anything else.
I'm generalizing because I don't know. I'm not from there. But I mean,
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah, I mean, there's so little that they had, or the place is smaller. But I mean, everybody. It's like we read Judge Dredd, we watched Doctor Who.
Yep.
This is what we did.
Yep.
Just like in Canada, we all play hockey.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, and watch SCTV.
Well, yeah.
No.
And worship Rick Moranis.
There you go. Hey, before we totally jump in here, I want to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where you can buy some Doctor Who collections. InStock Trades is your best source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, omnibus editions, absolute editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. Remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free. And right now you can get our book club selection, which is Strangers in Paradise, Volume 1.
Yeah.
It is a discounted 47% off the cover price. And Tom, you picked that one.
Yeah,
so
I did.
We'll have to talk about this before you leave for Worcester.
Worcester. Are any of the Battlestar Galactica comics good?
Haven't read any of them.
You know, Remender wrote...
I don't want to read the classic one.
You don't want to read the classic?
No, I don't care.
The new one? Okay.
Yeah.
They had cool jackets on that show.
They did have... That was... They did have cool jackets. And not that I love
Apollo.
I got nothing against the old one. I just, whatever.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. Stuff. I remember watching it when I was a kid. And then even when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, this is kind of.
You can stream them on Netflix.
No. The old Battlestar.
Yeah, the old, like the entire series. It's so funny. And you watch them and it's like, wow, this is really bad.
some things should not be rewatched.
Mm-hmm. Even though I tell you, I'm such a dork, you know, back to the Doctor Who, I still watch those on like the Netflix streaming. You can watch old Doctor Who, and they're so terrible, but I love every freaking second of them.
I just like the opening theme.
All right. Well, hey, let's. Last week we kind of talked about the aughts and how comics have changed a little bit, and just kind of whatever. But this week I figure we should talk about some new comics that have been coming out, some stuff that we've read here over our Christmas break. Mm-hmm. Tom, why don't you? I was peering over the computer here at your stack of comics, and I think we've been reading a lot of the same things.
So the same this should be
just fine. So why don't you go ahead and lead us off?
Have you been reading the relaunch of Powers?
I have not.
I have not been reading it.
To debunk everything I
just said that we've been reading the comics.
Okay, and this is why.
Yeah.
I just bought the Powers Definitive Edition.
You're waiting for that.
Volume 3, and I've decided that I'm going, maybe not even trade, I'm going to go hardcover on Powers. And
I'm buying everything in Omnibus. I'm going to just wait for 50 issues.
Hey, maybe not a bad thing to do. I'm going back and I'm rereading the original Image series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Those are good.
Oh, they're fantastic.
They're very, very good.
Some of my favorite Bendis.
I've quite enjoyed the new relaunch.
There are two issues in?
Yep, two issues into it. It's gotten sort of to the parts I really enjoy about Powers, when it kind of plays around with different eras in time, mm-hmm. and sort of the superhero genre within the confines of those times. And the most recent story has been about World War II, sort of an Invaders Justice Society-like team, and kind of what they ended up doing after the war, where they became mob muscle in Vegas because they kind of lost.
Makes sense.
Yeah, they just didn't have anything to do after the war was over, and it includes a lot of curse words.
Kind of like retired heavyweight fighters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It deals with that, where of course Walker was part of that team, you know, in the 40s, and so you get to play around with Bendis, who I think is sometimes a little underrated when it comes to that, of playing around with like the genre stuff, mm-hmm. and looking at the different sort of genres of comics, because I think people think of him more as like an Avengers writer.
Well, because he was a genre writer before all this happened. You know, talking about the aughts, rise of Bendis at Marvel, and he was and probably still is a very good genre writer.
Yeah, and that's actually the Bendis I like the most.
Yes.
So Powers is really itched that scratch for the Bendis I really enjoy. Because I've said before, I'm not a huge fan of his Avengers stuff, but I love this stuff as I hold up Powers.
Powers, you know, I think it's going to be the one that, you know, years from now people are going to look back. You know, some people will look back. I'll look back, I guess, and say whenever I think of Bendis, I'll think of Powers.
Powers, yeah.
So,
yeah. That's my way
of saying it's my favorite stuff of what he does. So.
It's interesting with a guy like him, where he is so much of his most popular stuff it's the Avenger stuff, and that's most of the comic buying public, that is what he is the Avengers stuff. And when to me, I the stuff I love is Jinx and Goldfish and all that type of stuff, and it's really sort of amazing when you think about the decade and where Bendis ended up.
That's really true.
It was the decade for Bendis and Marvel.
Wow, that is amazing. I didn't even think about it until just now. You're right.
Yeah, like where he started and then he's the driving force.
Ultimate Spider-Man, man. That's without that book, Marvel comics today would be very different than the rise in popularity of Bendis through Ultimate Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. And sort of, it's amazing that he's become the driving force of the Marvel universe.
Yeah,
but he also writes stuff like Powers.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Good for him.
Absolutely,
he gets a chance to do that. And it's funny because I'm not the biggest fan of Oeming's art either, but I like his art in Powers. Like, I can't say that I've liked stuff I've seen him do outside of that. But for some reason, it works with Powers. It's like when you have certain creators that. Aren't your favorite, but they still, there's one thing they do, and for whatever reason, if it's like the freedom to do that type of story, or that's obviously when it started, it was a work, you know, based upon Bendis's and Oeming's love for doing this book, and it's kind of cool to see that they've been given a venue to continue doing it with more exposure. And what's awesome, I do love that they've got more pages in the issues. It's more expensive, but there's more issues, and I think it helps. I think it helps with the way Bendis writes to have more pages per issue.
A little air to breathe, more space.
Yeah. Art wise, I think it helps too, because Oeming likes to do funky things with, you know, the layout of pages and the flow of pages, and
they're a great team on that book, and they have been from the word go.
They fit together well.
Yeah, I don't think I could see them on an Avengers book, though, for Powers.
I gotta say, you know, the one thing Bendis always does that drives me insane is when you have like a page laid out and you have like boxes, and it goes across.
It drives me.
And you know what book does that? The Superman World of New Krypton. Every issue, there are two pages that I get confused on because
I hate it when that happens. Well, that happened in Ultimate Spider-Man a lot,
and it's the panel breaks don't happen in a way that makes it easy for you to know
how am I supposed to read this.
Is this supposed to jump over to the next page or not?
And then inevitably you've picked the wrong way to read it, and then you're like, this is confusing, and then you're like,
I feel like I just missed part of the conversation. Oh shit!
Yeah, and it's like, oh yeah, wait a second, I read it. That's not a good thing when you're reading a comic.
Here's an idea: if you're gonna do something like that, put a fucking arrow by the box.
Oh, exactly.
I've seen it before in comics, and you know what? Just assume that your readers are dumb like me, and put an arrow pointing to the next box.
Superman World of New Krypton, every issue, there's a sequence like that that drives me absolutely insane.
That's an interesting book, and my love of Greg Rucka is been professed on this show enough.
Oh, really?
I'm a fan of Greg's work, and I really like James Robinson. I don't know how they're going to finish that story up, because it really felt like it was on an upward trajectory to about issue 6.
And then it became something else.
And then it's like, I don't know where they're going with this. Yeah. And they have like two issues left. Yeah, it was
that can be a good thing, though,
It was full throttle, and then they've kind of been playing around with a few things the last couple of issues.
And then it became sort of like the Gust of the Month, Adam Strange and Gem of Saturn, and it was like, interesting.
Green Lantern, So I'm not exactly for sure what they're going to do in these last two issues.
It can be a good thing
because it was feeling like a much more concise 12-issue story, and now
it's kind of freewheeling all over the place.
I've got a sneaking suspicion that they're gonna come to that last issue, and it's gonna be a lead in to the Earth New Krypton War.
Yeah, I guarantee that's how it ends.
But I really kind of hope it tells a more complete story. Mm. But I'm starting to feel like it's not going to.
Yeah, but it tried every every Wednesday when I get that book and I get to that 2-page and I'm like, it's not necessary. This, right. You know, like, especially when, you know, readers have, there's a way of reading. There's sequential storytelling has like its rules that's, you know, and I understand like, oh, you know, we're going to bend the rules. But at some point it's like, I shouldn't get to the end of the 2 pages and be like, I read this in the wrong order. You know, like I've been reading comics for like 25 years. You know, like this isn't the first time I read a comic. I shouldn't get confused.
I'm not a newbie at this.
Yeah, I shouldn't be confused by this. But it actually hasn't happened in Powers yet, which is surprising. But I've been enjoying it quite a bit.
Cool. Mr. Norton, have you go next? But you also suggested the music for this episode.
Uh-huh.
And that is?
Oh, Jellyfish. I mean, I was trying to think of something that you might like.
You had to think a long time about
it. Well, no, I didn't. I mean, I've got a lot of 80s hair metal and stuff on this iPod. Yeah, I didn't want to get something that it's going to
be. Like, I can't find anything with a banjo on here.
Listen, it's going to be Cherry Pie 4 times.
I know, exactly.
It's going to be Warrant. Oh, it's going to be Winger.
Cherry Pie, that's our sophomore year of high school, Mike. Right?
About? Sounds about right.
Yeah, about that. Yeah. Warrant?
Yep.
That's Warrant. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. So music for this episode is by Jellyfish, which I love.
The comic tie-in for Jellyfish. You know what the comic tie-in for Jellyfish is?
No.
Well, Jellyfish, the singer, drummer of the band, Andy Sturmer, is also a music producer and put together the band Puffy Amiyumi.
Hmm.
And actually wrote the Teen Titans Go theme song.
Oh, really? Yes. Which was the comic that you worked on?
Yep.
There you go.
Teen Titans Go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, which speaking of, before you let us know what your pick is, Billy Batson and Shazam.
Magic of Shazam, yes. That's my new book.
And your first issue comes out?
February. Should be February. So there you go. The Return of Black Adam.
Nice, yeah, nice. And so. I've seen some of the preview art on it, and it looks fantastic.
It's fun. I've always liked Shazam. I never thought I'd get to draw him. For some reason, I never thought about him as a character I'd want to draw. Mm-hmm. And that's when I have editors ask me, it's like, what do you want to work on? And I sit there for seriously for like 30 seconds. Go, and it makes me sound like I'm not enthusiastic. Or so like, you know what? You pick something. You know that I really like having somebody just give me something because you're going to pick something I didn't think of, and that's going to make it exciting for me.
You're probably the only artist at DC that doesn't go Batman.
I'm probably the only artist that doesn't want to draw Batman. I definitely do not want to draw.
You don't want the bat?
You know what? I like Batman fine. I don't want to draw him.
Really? Why not?
I just don't.
That
I don't like drawing that stuff.
Hmm.
I mean, I for some reason I will draw Robin all day, but I don't feel like I am the person to be drawing Batman.
Okay, you're too bright and sunny.
I don't even know if it's that.
Yeah.
You know, I just feel
it's your
like,
bright and sunny personality. Mike.
Yeah, that's what it is. Well, you know, one of my favorite bands is Jellyfish. They're not exactly doom and gloom either, but they. I just feel like I've seen it done better. I mean, everybody's done Batman.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to do Batman and put their spin on it. And I'm thinking, I've drawn Batman in several things. Yeah. You know, I've done them before. I just haven't drawn the actual Batman book. So I feel like I've got my share out of it. I don't have to draw them anymore.
That's cool. All right. What do you got for us?
I haven't been reading monthly stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've just, especially over Christmas and stuff, I've just been picking things off of my getting bigger stack of graphic novels and stuff like that. I meant to pick up on my Buffies and stuff that I haven't read, but I finally read a couple of things. I read Asterius Polyp, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where you hear all this hype, kind of like the Avatar movie. You hear all this hype and you're just like, well, is it going to be? It can't possibly be as good.
Yeah,
as
I'm set. It's set up for a huge fail.
Yeah, for me now. But and then you read a serious poem, and you're like, wow, well, yeah, I can see why everybody likes this. Yeah, you know, that kind of awesome. And that's always the best kind of experience. You know, so that I read that. There's not really much to say that hasn't been said about that. So I'll just say it's awesome. I read it.
Yeah, it's it was a fan. It was awesome.
And I just read I know we're supposed to only pick one thing, right?
No, go for it. We're freewheeling. Dude.
Have you read Asterius yet?
Not yet.
It's good. I recommend it.
I refuse to.
Like everybody else in the country, I recommend it.
You're not going to go see Avatar either.
I probably will once it was part of the Carasotis $5 club.
I've read the most recent Captain Britain MI-13 trade finally, so I'm caught up with what everybody else was liking.
I've got some bad news for you, Mike.
Yo, I heard
there's not going to be another one after that.
Which does suck because it gets to an interesting place with that.
Yeah, it was a fun book.
You know,
it's a shame.
But
that vampire missiles, man.
That I said it before when I read the first one that it reads like. Like that Doctor Who show. It's like
Paul Cornell is a Doctor Who writer.
You pointed that out. It's like this is those crazy ideas that you would only see on these British TV shows because it started out that they had low budgets and they had to be more creative with what they did. And I'm looking at this, it's like shooting vampires at the Earth.
From the moon.
Awesome. From like a boat in space.
That sounds like a joke. You know, I mean, it's like something I would put in like one of the 24-hour comic. You know, I'm going to shoot a vampire at you. You know, that's funny, but it works. And that's really cool.
As opposed to werepirates.
Seriously, you could probably make that work, right?
Which, speaking of the Curse, your 24-hour comic, is that for sale online yet?
I was talking to Zach Cruzy from DCBS, so that's something I'm working on right now.
Sweet.
So in Chicago, you can get it here at Challengers. I recommend you do that, and pretty soon you'll be able to get it, I think,
at DCBS. Feed Mike. That's fun. Mike needs to eat.
Yep. Yeah. I'd say for details, just check on ihatemike.com.
Definitely.
You didn't like one of my suggestions. I saw on
Twitter. That book?
Yeah, you did not like The Looking Glass Wars.
And I felt bad about that too. You know,
you don't have to feel bad if you don't like something, man.
Well, no, I feel bad about. I'm hesitant to. Because in the internet world where everybody complains about everything, everybody can see everything too. Mm-hmm. So there's part of thing in the back of my head where if I say that I don't like this, then maybe that writer will see it and he'll declare jihad on my family or something like that.
He'll be like, get the fan base together. We're going after
Mike exactly. And so don't I'm hesitant.
Don't buy Green Arrow.
Yeah, so I usually well, there's enough of those guys. I usually try not to do that, at least in a public forum.
Yeah.
But I just I did not like that book and didn't I wanted click with to
you.
Yeah.
Were you doing audiobook or reading it?
It was audiobook and that may have something to do with it, but I just felt like if I was reading it felt like I was reading a movie script rather than a book. You know what I mean?
Okay, I can
the
see
dialogue
that.
Was very thin, I thought, and the dialogue was the majority of the story, I thought. And I was like, this is like a movie script. That's what movie scripts do. They don't really describe a scene very well. They just have the people talk you through it.
Yeah, my experience with it was, and we're talking about Frank Bedore's Looking Glass War. I had kind of like a reverse experience with it where I read
the comic.
I read the comics that are based on things that are kind of hinted at.
Because I got to that part and I remember you saying that. Mm-hmm. And every time I mentioned that I was reading that book to somebody, they said, oh, yeah, that comic's really good. And I'm like, well, maybe I picked the wrong thing.
The comic. Wrong medium.
Yeah, I know. I should have just got the comic. And that never works out like that. The comic tie-ins are better than the actual. Really good.
Well, because you know you listen to or read that book, and Hatter M is probably the most interesting character in the book. And the comic Hatter M is all about him, where Looking Glass Wars is all about Alice. And I still enjoy the books, but it more in a if you like The Golden Compass, it's kind of
it's totally little, like yeah, that. Yeah, actually, you mentioned Hatter M, and that was one of the points where I decided I wasn't going to read it anymore. Was when, I mean, there's a scene where he's being a badass and he's fighting somebody.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, it's my turn.
He says he actually says that line. Now it's my turn. And I was like, seriously?
I say that all the time in my life. Like, now it's my turn.
Seriously?
How? Whenever there's a tax return, someone brings it in.
Now it's my turn.
Now it's my turn.
But I imagine I'm Wolverine in the tunnel. It's been the, as you said on Twitter, it's the only time it worked.
Yeah, that's the only time. The one time.
That's right. We're on 11 o'clock this week, and I said that's my all-time favorite comic book panel.
It should be retired like a jersey. They should hang that up, and nobody else should do that.
Never to be worn ever again.
But because it's incredibly cheesy now when you do that.
Well, it's one of those things, too, where reading something is different from... It's like when you read comic book dialogue out loud.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't...
Yeah,
it's not how people talk.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it can be weird when you listen to a book on tape or like an audio book to hear someone say the words.
I totally agree. It's just like seeing, and it's why nobody wears the costumes in the comic books, because you look at it and you're going, huh?
It just doesn't.
That doesn't work.
It doesn't work like that.
Yellow spandex does not instill fear in my heart.
No.
I want to laugh at Wolverine. Bright, I don't want to fight with him.
Yeah. Like, that's not a... Yeah, imagine wearing a yellow, blue stripe.
It'd be scary.
Yeah.
You have to have knives in your forearm to be scary.
You look ridiculous.
That's the only way he's pulling that off.
You know, it was that... A Wolverine note. I picked up Ultimate Alliance 2 for the Wii to play over the holiday here, and there's a whole trivia.
Yeah, area. Yeah, they had that in the last one too. They do that in those games.
And one of the questions was, what was the original concept for the character Wolverine? It had A, B, C, D, and I guess the original concept is that he was a mutated Wolverine. Like an actual Wolverine that had mutated.
Him and Rocket Raccoon. Can meet up, team up in a book together.
that's retarded.
I hate those things ridiculous. Because I figure I'm playing it. I should get them all.
You should
right.
get like 99%.
I never do.
I did okay. I only missed like five. So.
Oh, you did. I think you did better than me because I don't. There was especially because they had a lot of new continuity stuff in there too.
There was some. Yeah,
and I didn't know any of that stuff.
Well, I mean, it's like, what's the real name of. Pick a new character, like one of the Runaways
Songbird
kids
or something.
Yeah, Songbird. Yeah, they had Song. What's Songbird's real name? It's like,
don't
read
care.
So,
don't
yeah,
care.
Yeah, click. Yeah. So it's a cool game, though.
I enjoyed it a lot. I need to get that. I've never played any of the Ultimate Alliance stuff.
You should.
It's fun.
Come over for one of those mandates. And
where we sit around and play Ultimate Alliance, too.
I mandate.
I wish DC. I think I would get a big kick out of a DC one. Right?
That would be
whatever
awesome.
Whatever happened with that DC Universe thing?
It's being worked on. Still, that thing better be awesome when it comes out.
You know, they've been working on that for like 10 years.
Well, you got to put in a lot of time in these games. That's why they're. This is going to be massively multiplayer. I mean, there's a lot of technical issues they got to. Plus, everything's being written by an actual comic writer. I mean, these are going to be good stories, it seems like.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it.
So I'm very excited.
Jeff Johns is a busy guy.
A guy that we've talked about on the show a little bit, maybe once or twice here in the last month, J.T. Krull?
Krull.
Yeah. J.T. Krull.
Yeah.
His Blackest Night tie-ins for Teen Titans have been really good.
He's taken over Green Arrow, too. So
yeah.
He's going to have a lot of do with that big Green Arrow crossover stuff.
Okay. Are you doing stuff with him?
No, I'm done. Stuff's done, so the new team's already working on that stuff.
Okay. I really like what he's been doing with these Teen Titans issues. Mm-hmm. It's like he made Teen Titans actually fun. He did the Blackest Night Titans miniseries, the little 3-issue mini, and did these 2 issues of the Blackest Night tie-in, which was a Ravager, Rose, and Deathstroke.
Deathstroke.
And I had Joseph, which was Joey, was what was his name in the Titans?
That would be Jericho.
Jericho. Yeah. So it was that whole family, and hell, most of them are dead.
Jericho.
So
great hair.
He has the ultimate trivia question because it's unanswerable. It's like, why is he named Jericho?
Why is he named Jericho?
Yeah.
Is it ironic?
Nobody knows.
Is it ironic?
Really?
I can't find out.
Is it ironic because he's mute? You know, like the walls of Jericho are torn down by a horn? That would be a stretch.
Oh, listen to you. We should talk to Marv Wolfman. He's a Wolfman character,
somebody,
right?
I think, told me what Marv Wolfman said once, but I don't remember. So, okay. Obviously.
I won't tell you. Is that what Marv Wolfman said?
I won't tell you.
Stop bothering me, kid.
Why do you care?
Why do you care? What's it to you?
What do you care? And then he kicks you. Aren't you more concerned there's a character named Deathstroke? Deathstroke.
I love Deathstroke.
Not Deathstroke the Terminator.
Yeah. See, that's the part I like. They slowly weeded out the Terminator.
It's not enough that I'm Deathstroke. I'm also the Terminator.
The
freaking Terminator.
Deathstroke, the Terminator. Yeah,
and he signs it with a knife.
I like how they've casually cut off the Terminator part most of the time. Which Deathstroke are you talking about? Deathstroke, the Terminator.
Deathstroke of Florence.
They just call him Slade now.
Yeah.
They've just taken all of that out.
It's one of those names. There's tons of comic book characters with goofy names.
Oh, yeah.
Deathstroke the Terminator. Imagine saying that out loud to somebody.
Oh, no.
Yeah, who's that?
Who's coming?
It's Deathstroke the Terminator.
No, when I hear that word, Deathstroke the Terminator, I think of a kid wearing a leather duster coming out of an arcade. It's just saying, Deathstroke the Terminator.
I rolled up this new elven thief named Deathstroke the Terminator. It just seems weird.
What is the Challenger one? Patrick, what is this?
Oh, the Challenger Olympics.
Oh, here, hold on. Let me turn this mic on. So,
some sort of trivia contest, a trivial contest.
All right, go ahead.
It is neither trivial nor it is a contest, though.
Yeah,
discuss.
I gave this to you to read for your events for later, but for right now, Challenger Olympics is actually like the Olympics for comic stores. Basically, there are 8 events to compete in. It's open to anybody, customers, employees maybe. We're not sure about that. There's bagging and boarding books. That's a category. Box building, how fast you can build a box.
Sounds like you're getting people to do work for you.
There's dusting. There's vacuuming.
There's washing my car.
No, these are all skills that you would need to have your own collection.
Yeah.
Bagging and boarding, box building, trivia contest, scavenger hunt, where you're given a list of things to look around at the floor of the store so you can find them, how fast you can find them in. Salesmanship, how well you can pitch a book to somebody and get one of your friends into a book.
I'm good at that.
Back issue
organization. You are good at that.
You have a stack of 100 books you have to put in the right alphabetical order.
Tom is good at that.
Yeah.
I can't read.
Name the artist contest, see if you have...
Oh, I can kill with that.
Good at that, yeah.
And then
we got a team. We got a team.
Can we team?
There are no teams.
Oh, come on.
Single
there's no team in Challengers.
Well, no, you have nations.
Yeah, but they're individual competition.
Yeah.
This is
with
like
nations?
This is the decathlon. This is a decathlon.
Don't you want personal pride in being able to beat it?
No, not if we can win by teaming up.
Enough of your everyone gets a trophy bullshit, Chris, all right?
I don't want everyone to get a trophy. I want the trophy.
There's a week of qualifying rounds taking place between January 16th and January 21st, where you come in, you set up an appointment, come in, we'll time you all these events.
Wow.
We'll have a live final championship on Saturday the 23rd.
At Soldier Field.
In the Challengeratorium.
Okay.
Which is what you're sitting in it, really. People have been signing up already. There is a contender who thinks he's going to smoke everybody.
Who's
Mr.
That?
Chris Burnham has already signed up.
Oh, wow.
He's called this the event he's been waiting his whole life for without knowing it.
Now, do you do this traditional Greek style where you're naked?
Well, you can wear figures and stuff.
Okay.
Traditional Greek.
Okay.
Greco-Roman. Greco-Roman boarding.
Exactly. There'll be
bag and boarding.
The losers will be eaten by lions.
Oh, awesome. I can't wait, bro.
I'm going to pick the... I'm picking... I want the trident and net.
I do, too.
That's good for good. We have a decided if employees are some employees are eligible, but we haven't decided if Dal and I are eligible for this or not.
That's not fair. That's what you do for a living.
That's what you do for.
That's like when they let the pro basketball players on the team.
Well, you know, the Olympics aren't just for amateurs anymore. They have opened up the professionals.
That's true.
I say nay. I say nay.
we probably won't be, just to be fair.
You want to, though. Look at his face. He wants.
I want to build boxes. Except for the. I'm not good with organization. I always have Dal do my organization for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why there's two of you.
That's right.
It's okay.
And I don't know who's going to be actually writing the trivia contest. So if I write it out.
Can we put my Blue Beetle questions in there?
Jesus. Wow.
Blue Beetle trivia. Yeah,
well, I know the answers now. Blue Beetle trivia. I know the answers now.
Well, I got harder ones.
Oh, I bet you do. I bet you do.
I want to drop this off while you...
All right, so where can people get details on that?
They can get it on ChallengersComics.com website, or they can email us at challengers@challengerscomics.com. All the events and their times and things are listed up on the website as well. So, yeah.
And you have to be a Chicago resident, obviously.
Yeah.
No, not necessarily.
You can fly in.
Or you have to be in store.
Yes, you have to go through the qualifying rounds in store and then be here for the live events. And we don't really know what the trophies or prizes are going to be like yet. We'll figure that out.
All right.
They're going to be made out of Rice Krispie treats.
Nice.
They're going to be made out of Rice Krispies.
And thank you for hosting us. Yeah, and happy new year to everyone. Everyone in the Challengers family.
Happy new year to you, bro.
Happy new year.
Have a new year.
Pack your car.
Chowder.
Chowder. Get yourself some coffee, huh?
Chowder.
Oh, that's funny.
Wait, I was being Irish. Didn't you guys get that?
That's like Christian Alamein's Irish accent.
Worse. You know, I think if Christian wasn't so busy inking Green Lantern, I think he would want to be your official unofficial replacement.
Well, he'd have to take a couple night classes.
Oh, zing.
At the Tom Cater's School of Broadcasting.
I was gonna jump in with a Christian impression, but now I'm just gonna walk away with my. Thanks, fellas.
All right, thank you, Patrick. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd get into that competition, but you know,
You got nothing to prove.
You're moving away because you're scared.
I'm moving to the Northeast, new more shop, different shops, different dollar bins, more quarter books.
That's why you gave me
They're
all
completely
your Legion.
Different.
That's
know,
why you gave me all those Legion Coast. Issues. He's just gonna go buy them again.
I'm just gonna buy for a quarter piece, like I did those.
He's prestiging.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Tom, let's rip through some more books here. What else you got?
Let's look through my stack. Boom, boom, boom.
Oh, No.
Yes?
No?
No, you're confusing me.
No, you're confusing
me. No, go that way.
I don't understand what you say. This is... Oh, bad. I haven't read this yet.
Oh, well, it was good.
Why did you have it out?
this is everything I got.
Oh, it's, yeah, okay. You just bought it.
Let me just tell you, Garth Ennis had another new story in his Battlefields line.
My favorite Garth Ennis stuff that's coming out right now.
And it was really good.
Of course it is.
You know, it's not a right war story.
It is about... bombers, Australian bomber pilots.
Oh, interesting. They're really? Getting drunk probably a lot, right?
There's a lot of drinking in this one. Well, yep. A lot of drinking.
Convicts, a lot of
dropping bombs. There's a green pilot that gets thrown into this very veteran.
Like a Martian Manhunter green pilot?
No, not a green. No, he's a rookie.
Rookie pilot.
He's a rookie pilot that gets thrown into a veteran.
I was like, what is it?
Literally green. And it's about like how the others don't accept him because he's green.
He's green.
He's extremely green.
Well, actually, they don't accept him because he's green, but he has to earn their respect. Yeah, it's a rookie bomber pilot that gets put into this group of veteran bomber crew, and it's a very, very good story.
It's a high quality book.
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of come to expect that from Garth Ennis and Battlefields.
I haven't read this yet, but I see that Richard Corbin did another Hellboy story.
Yeah, that is the standalone.
Yep.
Dark Horse has done a series of one-shot books. They did a really cool Abe Sapien, which was on your recommendation. Yep. I would have picked it up anyway, but it was great.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's another good one. So
some Blackest Night stuff, which I read. Blackest Night JSA.
Mm-hmm.
I really, you know, I like James Robinson's writing quite a bit. I just think like JSA is the book he should always be writing.
Yes.
He should always be writing that. Because I like him. I like his Superman stuff.
Something with legacy.
I like his Superman stuff, but he has a very unique style. Like, his style of writing is very unique, and sometimes the style, it's like you can see the strings a little bit. His style sometimes overpowers, like, the story that's being told a little bit because it's so unique. It's so different from how other people approach writing stuff.
Yeah.
That I think it can throw you off a little bit. With JSA, for whatever reason, when he writes those characters, his style fits.
It's okay. It's okay to see the strings in that book sometimes.
Well, it fits the way he tells stories so well that he does it so well that he kind of, his style fades into the very nature of the book. And it was, since I love the JSA, the old Golden Age character so much, it was probably the one that I was actually most disturbed by, seeing like old JSA members come back
as zombies.
As Black Lanterns. So I was like, oh, Wesley Dodds. Oh, Wesley Dodds.
No, not Wesley Dodds.
Nah, don't bring him back. It was so sad.
Do you think they're about through the point of a Blackest Night where it's like, okay, we can basically go to every book in DC and there are going to be dead characters that you can resurrect and bring back to just kind of torture these characters. You think they're about done with that and we're about ready to get on to the next part of the story?
Well, yeah, they've solicited all the stuff that they're going to do.
Okay,
so.
Okay, because I'm enjoying it. I'm still liking it. But it kind of does become a one-trick pony of here are these characters that are dead and they're going to come back and they're going to torment the
depends completely on your interest in the book that you're reading. Like,
yeah, I think so too.
If you don't really care about the JSA, the whole structure of the story, there's not going to be anything in Blackest Night JSA that's going to interest you if you don't care. If you don't care about the JSA, if you don't like the, you know, like, oh, I don't really like them, but I'm enjoying Blackest Night.
Yep.
It's sort of the good thing about how they're doing it, but it's also sort of the weakness of it is that these tie-in issues, there's nothing that's happening in these that is that crazy tied into the story. It's solely based upon how much you like those characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So whenever people are like, which ones should you read? Well, like, if you don't like the Flash or the Rogues, don't read the Blackest Night Flash, because it's going to be about the dead Rogues. I mean, that's the structure of it, and that's how it's going to work.
How do you, Mike, being the big Blue Beetle fan that you are, how do you like the Booster Gold
Blackest? Well, that's what I was just going to say, because I mean, as soon as I heard about this mini, I was saying, okay, when's the Blue Beetle thing? Yeah. And then my next question was, I get to draw that, right? So I was happy, but I wasn't happy because, you know, I'm a Ted Kord fan.
Sure.
And it's like Tom's saying, it's all about your attachment to the characters, whether or not which book is going to work for you, which isn't. And I guess that means it works, because I read it and I'm like, oh God, I wish he was back, you know, that kind of thing. And, as far as the story, I think it was one of the better ones of the tie-ins so far. So, I,
you know, but you are emotionally tied to
it. I'm emotionally
character.
Tied to it, but I also think that, I mean, I think that I may be too close to it to be able to judge right, but I think it worked. I mean, so many tie-ins can seem like, this is what we did to boost sales this month. Let's put the banner up.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But this one, I mean, if anything is important in Booster Gold, it's, you know, I mean, his
relationship with Ted.
So, I mean, of course, it makes sense. So
That he would come. Yeah. That would be the one they would bring back.
And I always meant to ask you, I mean, we've talked about it before. You're a huge Blue Beetle fan.
Mm-hmm.
Are you as much a Booster fan?
No.
Why?
I don't know why. I am. No, don't get me wrong. I am a Booster Gold fan. Mm-hmm. As when it came out, I thought, wow, this is a cool character. And I think I like them both, because when they did come out, they came out right. Blue Beetle came out at Crisis, and Booster was right after. Yeah. And you were in on the ground floor with them. I know Blue Beetle existed before that, but this was his first. I mean, he was white clean, and this is his existence, and you felt like you were in from the beginning.
Issue
one. So that I felt like I was a kid in the in the 60s picking up Spider-Man, that's my character, you know, even though Spider-Man was my character when I was a kid. I mean, that's how I learned how to read, but this is my character. I found him. He's mine. This is my character. And I was with Booster to a certain extent, but Booster was a little too tongue in cheek for me, you know? I mean, he was what Blue Beetle later became in the Justice League books,
where he
had a sense of humor about him, that he was a little too self realizing that he was a con artist.
Yeah.
You know, he knew he was playing a game and all that stuff. There's plenty of superhero action in it and stuff, but it was a little too self-aware for me as a kid. And so I guess I just didn't get as attached. I liked him. Mm-hmm. I like him a lot more now. But Blue Beetle was my guy. I mean, he was like, he was Spider-Man and Batman.
Probably always will be.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So
you're even wearing blue right now.
Well, that's, I'm a Memphis fan.
So you're greatly disturbed by that Black Lantern Ted Kord. So mean.
Well, I just didn't. They really gussy up the outfits. There's a lot of extra accoutrement on the stuff that I wouldn't have done if I had designed it. But I like how everything has the hand on it in some way.
The black hand symbol.
Yeah, and I think his costume was one of the better designed ones, because I mean he's got the area right there for it. So.
Mm-hmm. I also got to say with the Blackest Night JSA that Eddie Barrows does a really good job.
Eddie Barrows always does a real good job, and it's he's just dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you like flip through it, and you know it with both him and Ivan Rice, however you pronounce it, both of them kind of have that dynamic, look to
you
them.
You never get bored looking at their artwork. Yeah, I mean they're gonna
They do a good job. They do a good job, as I think they fit the
people's
taste.
On, yeah.
People's taste of what they think an event book should look like.
Yes, but exactly. Not
staticky. Like they're not too
You don't
stiff.
Want them to do the quieter moments though.
No.
Where you're sitting on a couch.
Yeah.
Because everybody looks like they're about to spring off the couch.
Yeah. Something needs to be blown up in the background.
Yeah.
As you flip through it,
I was really impressed, because I think I've always liked him, but I think like he's gotten better and better.
Yeah, I've always liked him too.
And like recently, his stuff has just been awesome. Mm-hmm. So I quite enjoyed him. And
he seems to work a lot with James Robinson.
He's done lately now.
Yeah, he's done some other stuff with him. What was the series he was working on before this?
He was working on some of the Superman stuff.
Working on Superman for a while.
Yep, 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 yep.
And I also quite enjoyed Blackest Night #6. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
awesome.
All right,
it's disturbing. It's such a nihilistic story.
It is. I haven't even read.
It's funny
all
though
of them.
Because I think it's you know like when someone like Grant Morrison writes something, people kind of really go out of their way to find like what the metatextual sort of discussion of his, and Jeff Johns is kind of the opposite direction, where I don't think people pay attention to that. But Blackest Night sort of has a very disturbing metatextual element to the fact that the whole idea that the universe doesn't need guarding, that like life is just a temporary thing, that it's like a virus over like everything that's dark, like nothing was there before and nothing is going to be there afterwards, and all life is like a virus growing on the skeleton
in between
you know. The I think it was in Green Lantern 49 or something, where the one of the Black Lanterns was like, you know, the Guardians, the whole thing's a lie, the universe doesn't need guarding, you know, it's never needed anyone to guard it, it's going to go back to what it was before. So nihilistic. I'm sure everyone survives. I'm sure the last issue, Jeff Johns doesn't kill everyone. And like, well, now
DC
we're back.
DC stops publishing.
Yeah, it's like, well, this is where the direction that it's going. But and it was cool. It's also it appeals very much to the nerdiest like 8-year-old kid part of you, where you're like, oh, you know, Scarecrow got a Sinestro ring. Yeah. Awesome, you know.
That's exactly what I was thinking. When I was
the Flash moment where Hal is like, you know, Barry, these rings are chasing us, and they're fast, and there's like, the close up of Flash. I'm faster.
You know what I like about Ivan Rice? He really draws people with masks really well.
Uh-huh.
You know, like when you have the, because it can look goofy when you have a close up on someone wearing. Mm-hmm. And I always think of the Alex Ross Flash painting.
Mm-hmm.
Where that costume just looks creepy. It just looks
like a Halloween party.
Yeah, it looks like a Halloween costume as opposed to like. Yeah. But he does like, you know, that panel. It looks really, it looks sort of natural and it's got emotion to it. So I enjoyed Blackest Night Part 6. It feeds the 8-year old Tom.
It's going to be interesting because they're setting this up and they're explaining why heroes or villains or whoever that have died have come back. And it's basically that Necron has allowed them.
He wants to use them to kill everyone.
Yeah. And so now you're explaining why over, you know, however many years that heroes have been able to die and then come back.
Yeah.
And then you're assuming that at the end of this, assuming that Necron will be defeated. And so does that mean, you know, dead is dead after this?
Which it's never going to be true.
Which, of course, it doesn't. But, you know, so they are kind of setting themselves up for having to, you know, come up with another reason why
people. Yeah. Well, it's. Well, it's one of those.
That's how you get stories.
That's one of those things where people are like, "This it will never be dead means dead because 20 years from now there'll be some other guy who's like Geoff Johns. Mm-hmm. He's like, I want to use these old characters because the thing with comics is when we think of it, we're like, oh, it's all one straight line of one idea. Mm-hmm. When it's really been a collection of like. Incredibly disparate people.
It's like a capillary system.
So when you're sitting here and you're like, you know, imagine being in a room, you know, with the writer or the editor, and both the writer and the editor and the artist want to use this character. And the only thing stopping them from using this character is that someone 25 years ago who was not involved with it was like, we should kill this character. You see why they bring people. They bring people back. There's no. Mm-hmm. It isn't like the ghost of the former editor is like looming. Like no, you can never. You can. This character was once deemed, you know, to be killed.
It's only been like that for like one time, and that was when Stan Lee was writing everything at Marvel.
Yeah, because it is one person's idea. It's the one, you know. Person one overriding kind of guiding hand. One who like this is what we're
don't
doing.
Don't say it was all his idea because Vince will reach through the iPod.
Jack Kirby, exactly. But I mean, it's just not realistic. You know, that's when you read comics for 30 years, people come back.
Yeah,
what are you supposed to do?
Sometimes they come back.
Sometimes, not all the time. Not everyone comes back. Ted Kord. He shows up. Oh,
no. You know, it's funny that you say that because Ted died how long ago?
It's only been like
4 years?
3 years?
Four or five. There's been a lot of.
He's been back. He's come back like once a year since then.
There's been a lot of
That's why I always have hope that they'll bring him back and they'll have a series. And it's like no, they brought him. He hasn't gone away.
Yeah, it's, it's like Phoenix. You know, it never really goes away. You know, Barry Allen. How long has Barry Allen been running around the DCU?
He pops off up every couple of years.
Yeah, exactly.
Every Christmas.
Though I have to say, Jean Grey's still dead, isn't she?
Since the end of Morrison?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it is a long time.
Isn't that? That's a pretty long time for, like, a character to...
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
have no idea.
We've already, you know, Batman went away, and they're already soliciting Batman's return. Captain America's come, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Well, even with Jean Grey, I mean, the specter of Jean Grey is always there. There have been moments where they've alluded to her.
You know, Jean Grey.
They're doing it right now with the baby
But she's the punchline to the joke about like dead characters coming back, which is ironic because she's actually been dead for a
long
while.
Time.
For comic books. Yeah,
her name's Phoenix. I mean, come on.
Especially since
that's a good point.
Marvel hasn't exactly been beholden to the things that Morrison did. You know, they haven't gone out of their way to keep a lot of that stuff.
I'm about halfway through that, though, and I'm enjoying it.
Did you get the omnibus?
No, I didn't. I was.
Have you read it previously?
I had read bits and pieces of it when it was coming out, and so I actually know how it ends.
Yeah.
But I missed big chunks in the middle. So Tifa, the Things from Another World, they had their Denton scratch sale, and I picked up all the trades for like 60% off. So
that's one of my favorite. I like the Magneto in that is my one of my favorite Magneto. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never really felt any need to read another Magneto. Have you read the Magneto story yet?
I think so. Okay. Is that kind of one of the
last where he tears up New York?
Yeah.
I mean, that's my favorite.
Yeah. One of the last arcs.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite ones because it was so like
whenever he tore up Manhattan, and that didn't happen in any other Marvel books.
Yeah, but I always like the idea that he get in charge and everyone be like, why are we following this guy? He's just some old dude.
He's crazy.
Yeah. He's crazy. Like everyone would like bitch and moan about it. And he just ended up being like a sad old guy who, you know,
yeah, it was very, very aware.
He didn't have any juice.
Yeah. It was very aware that he was yesterday's news.
Yeah.
Exactly. The only one that liked those costumes in that run. I like those costumes.
I liked when quietly drew them. Yeah. I thought that they were quite good. Yeah. The leather jacket,
nice. I updated it, so
I thought they were cool.
I always felt like that was coming right off of the heels of the first movie.
Oh,
right?
That's totally why it was happening.
Yeah.
But I thought they worked.
Yeah.
I thought it didn't make sense to go back to the old costumes after that, because they kind of just.
Yeah, sure. I guess they have.
I mean, the first issue, they obliterate the need for them because they're practically making fun of their costumes in that first issue, and then you kind of have to retcon. A reason for them to go
back. Well, maybe they weren't so bad.
Listen, we spent a lot of money on these, and things are getting a little tight in Chuck Xavier's bank account, so we're going to have to go back.
It's a lot cheaper to replace spandex than leather.
You're ripping up these leather jackets real fast. I need you to switch back to the spandex.
This is like $400. See?
Why hasn't the costume technology filtered its way down to the public in both universes? Why aren't people?
No, that's a very good question.
Imagine how much money you make selling unstable molecules to
everyone.
Because
it's not NASA funded. It's not taxpayer dollars. Even though Reed does make his money off of selling his patents, right?
So he probably has.
People probably are wearing unstable molecules.
Unstable molecules.
There's untapped stories. Go, I would Fred totally, Van Lente, go.
I would totally wear like unstable molecule, like long underwear in the wintertime.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
What would be the benefit, though, because you don't change shape?
You know, they wouldn't get dirty?
True. You could wear them forever.
Mm-hmm. You don't get dirty.
You know what the issue is?
Heat proof.
It's the cold. Marvel Universe clothing company lobbyists who have been pushing not to get.
You know what? He's moving to Boston. He's already trumpeting his Eastern liberal agenda.
My crazy Eastern liberal agenda. It's the lobbyists for the clothing companies in the Marvel universe that have kept unstable molecules from the common man.
It's funny how Tom is going to become more left by going to the right coast.
That's funny.
It's the sock manufacturers. You know, like, I go through socks fast. If I had unstable molecule socks, I need one pair.
That is a good point.
That's why I'm saying. I was buying some long underwear the other day, and my wife was like, don't you already have a pair of long underwear? And I'm like, do you want me to wear these 5 days
all
a week?
The time?
Yeah, it's right.
Make sure you get the kind of button butt flap ones.
I've also really wanted in my personal life to adopt. I'm going to shave, and I'm going to adopt the Reed Richards. Like when I'm really stressed out, I'll grow a beard
for one day.
Yeah, like this is I'm working hard, so you know, because I got like a 5 o'clock shadow.
I was reading Fantastic Four Omnibus a couple days ago, and they did that back in the 60s.
They did it all the time.
Reed would get stubbly whenever it was
stressed out. Yeah.
Which I was like, oh, look.
Listen, Fred Van Lente, do a miniseries called Marvel Retail, where it's just like, it's about a store in the Marvel Universe selling.
The Garment District.
The Garment District. They could have, shops. If they wanted to really tie in Tim Gunn into.
That
they
is so smart. Did anybody read that? Maybe they had something like that.
They might have. I have no idea.
The Jim McCann idea.
Where it's Project Runway in the Marvel Universe is all about working with unstable molecules.
Yeah,
and
you got to have a PhD.
There's an unstable molecule sweatshop in the basement of the Baxter Building.
Oh, controversy like Kathy Lee.
Sweatshop.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a sweatshop?
Kathy Lee Gifford?
Well, she didn't really personally have a sweatshop. Yeah. She was just involved. I think it was unbeknownst to her.
But
she
was involved. You know, Reed would get away with it because it would just be like denizens of some alternate universe.
Mole men.
Mole men.
They're moloids. Moloids.
That's why it's underground.
Yeah. That's perfect.
Well, in Marvel Retail, Mole Man opens a clothing line completely made by his mole men. But it's all poorly.
Totally writing Fantastic Four now. All three of them.
These are so poorly sewn. It's like a blind man suit.
It's like they were sewn in the dark.
Mole men, come on, people. It's dark down here. Or I want one time in an issue of Fantastic Four where they fight mole men, just two pages of just no dark, black, like, ow, no lights down here.
Be like the burn issues of Alpha Flight in the snowstorm.
Yeah,
yeah. Mole Man's overhead is out of control. He's got lights in his lair. Why? I don't know. And the amount of electricity he's using to light his caverns so his foes can see. Like, come on, Mole Man.
You can see in the dark, man.
Come on. Yeah, you can see in the dark. Use it to your advantage.
There's nothing to draw then.
Yeah. Oh, listen.
Chris Somney would tear that up. You know that he could do some black and white. He would just work a little sliver of white you'd love it.
Yeah, I'd buy it.
Yeah. We've done it. Fred Van Lente and Chris Somney, do it. Marvel Retail.
Zing. Okay, we'll have to email him. All right. Well, hey, let's wrap this one up. Mike, people can find you at ihatemike.com. Be on the lookout for The Curse.
The Curse, Billy Batson, Magic Shazam.
Mm-hmm. Finishing up your Green Arrow,
Black Canary ends in February. Blue Beetle ends in February.
And Billy Batson and Billy Batson starts in February. All right, awesome. Then we'll be updated because you're not happy unless you're doing three comics a month. So.
Billy Batson. Well,
I wouldn't call it happy.
A story of a boy lured into a subway car by a strange old man.
You know, Mike,
given magical powers.
If you're not going to be that busy drawing comics, I hear that there's an open chair coming up on the show. So,
oh Jesus!
You want to tour with the Beach Boys?
The world does. Yeah, Credence Clearwater Revisited. We're gonna go to all the state fairs. They're like, who's this guy?
From the DuQuoin State Fairgrounds, this is Around Comics.
It's like Buckethead and Guns N' Roses. What the hell's going on?
All right, Tom, you've got Tom versus the Flash coming out twice a week?
Yeah, twice.
Twice-ish? A week,
at least twice a week.
You can listen to more of me be drunk and angry on 11 o'clock.
You haven't been so angry lately.
It's my New Year's resolution.
Yeah, I've had the same resolution before though.
I figure it'll see me through March. Whenever the weather heals. Yeah. Really,
it's good intentions. That's what counts.
Yeah, I have the intention to be less angry on 11 o'clock. So we'll see.
I do buy books based on what you guys recommend.
Yeah, you know, Vince and I have been pushing each other's buttons lately. So
that's true.
I'm waiting for when you guys hook up.
Like it's like moonlighting.
And then the show's gonna.
11 o'clock comics is totally based on the sexual tension between me and Vince.
It's like you're the moonlighting of podcasts.
Am I Dave or Maddie?
Yeah. What?
Am I Dave or Maddie?
Are you Dave or Maddie? Ooh, it's a tough one. You're something else.
I'm the third person in the third room. Yeah, I'm Mark Harmon.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. I forgot he was on that show. That's when it started going south.
Bad. All right, so you can check that out on Thursday or Friday.
I'm Mr. Pesto.
No, I forgot about her. Oh, she was awesome. Okay, you can give us a shout on the hotline at 1-888-977-5903. You can also email the show at info@aroundcomics.com. You can email me personally at chris@aroundcomics.com. I'm going to try and be better about replying to emails. Been a little busy of late. All right, everyone, hope your 2010 is going swimmingly.
Magical.
Have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime,
in between times,
thank you, Thomas. We'll be everywhere in and around comics.
Whoa, the stereo.
Stereo. All right. We'll jellyfish here.
I thought you said did you say Mysterio or Stereo?
Mysterio.
No, Mysterio. Mysterio would be comic accurate, but I said Stereo.
I'm a little raspy.
A line of Mysterio goldfish helmets for kids at Marvel Retail.
Made in the basement of the Baxter Building.
Oh, yeah. By Molman.
Molman? Is that the Jewish Molman?
It's called Molman's.
It's called Molman. Come to Molman's. And every day,
views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole possession, is the sole property of Around Comics.
We own it and you. 2010 belongs to us, and this bitches.
This has been an Around Comics production. Copyright
2010. 2010. 2010. 2-0-1-0.
Molman's. Copyright.
Molman's. Yeah, that's right. If any of you...
Fred Van Winnie.
Any of you assholes steal Molman's. That's my Marvel pitch. I'm going to Twitter that to Tom Brevoort. Molman's. The lowest price consistent with quality.